Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, Patriots. This is John Jacob Schmidt at the Voice of the American Redoubt. It's my pleasure to present to you a Radio Free Redoubt exclusive presentation featuring constitutional lawyer and national speaker, airborne veteran, and founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes. As some of you know, Stuart Rhodes appeared on short notice to speak to a group of Oath Keepers and Patriots right here in the American Redoubt over in Bonner County, Idaho, this past Thursday evening at April 11th. For those of you who may be unfamiliar with Oath Keepers, it's the organization spearheading the mission of educating our warriors in blue and green, as well as veterans and other patriots, on the true meaning of the United States Constitution, as our nation's founding fathers intended. Just as importantly, if not more so, is the mission of reminding our warriors and the public of the oath that they took to uphold and defend that Constitution. The mission of Oath Keepers declares its steadfast dedication to uphold the oath and clearly articulates orders that we will not obey. As history has shown, tyrants will always attempt to use their society's warrior class to carry out and enforce their oppressive agendas on their own citizens. That can only be possible with the willing support of those warriors. If they refuse, the tyrant has no power to wield at all. And since the Constitution of the United States was designed explicitly for the purpose of limiting government in order to ensure a lasting freedom for its citizens, and as long as warriors and patriots stay true to their oaths and refuse to obey orders that violate that Constitution, we will have the best hope of stifling the agenda of the enemies of Americanism. Liberty. What a sweet word. Now, you can learn more about Oath Keepers by going to www.oathkeepers.org and learn about how you can get involved or join or support the worthy mission of Oath Keepers. Radio Free Readout strongly endorses Oath Keepers. In the speech you're about to hear, Mr. Rhodes speaks on many topics, including the current and emerging threats to our nation, including the looming economic threat our nation's facing. And he also talks about the reawakening of the Oath Keepers affiliate program, Operation Sleeping Giant, to help get Americans prepared for a likely future collapse, whether it be economic, political, cultural, or any combination of those. Operation Sleeping Giant addresses preparedness for a very difficult possible future, from the family, individual level to the community level and the state or regional level. Most of what he proposes is very consistent with the mission of Radio Free Redoubt and the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, and that is to promote self-sufficiency and networking among patriots and communities and states for mutual aid and also an expedited recovery in case of a major catastrophic event. There's more, so much more, but I assure you, the giant is awakening, and it's an honor to be a partner with Oath Keepers in this worthy endeavor. Stuart asked me in advance to ask your forgiveness for the loss of his voice and the difficulty he had speaking Thursday night. Of course, we all understand he's a patriot, and he's on a mission. He's in the middle of a national speaking tour supporting patriots and educating the public and our leaders and our warriors about the Constitution. In all of that, he's practically lost his voice completely, but he got through it, and I believe his message is worth hearing, and I hope you do too. Feel free to pass the link for this podcast onto your like-minded friends and family, or download it onto your phone or other portable media device. Burn it onto a CD. Spread the word. More importantly, ask yourself how you might be able to get involved. and listen to this and any other previous podcasts supporting the American Redoubt movement and the preservation of Americanism. To do that, you can go and visit us at RadioFreeRedoubt.com. So sit back and enjoy.
To add a couple things to what John said, it's not that I think it's impossible to change D.C. I think given enough time, you can. There's an awakening happening right now across the country, a revival, it's kind of like a religious revival, of an understanding of the Constitution and the importance of preserving our republic. And so I think given enough time, you will win. I think the Ron Paul movement is a good example of what's possible. You had young people across the country. Conventional wisdom among us older people is, well, the young people are all brainwashed in public school and brainwashed in colleges, and you kind of just write them off, right? But Ron Paul showed that's not accurate. You can still reach them with the message of liberty. Public schools do attempt to brainwash them. Problem is, public schools are so terrible that they wind up not teaching them anything. They can't even brainwash them properly. So by default, they wind up not really knowing much of anything, and they go to the internet, and that's where they learn the truth. So the internet is a powerful weapon on our side, which is why they will try to eventually shut it down. So I say give it enough time, you will win. Problem is that we're running out of time. And the opponents, the domestic enemies of the Constitution, understand that their time is limited, and that's why they are moving faster. You've seen, I'm sure, in the last few years, the assaults on our rights have increased exponentially. They're coming fast and furious. And so that was the whole point of Oath Keepers, is to try to buy the freedom movement more time. If I can get the guys with the guns to stand down and refuse to be used against you, like happened during Katrina, if we can get that to not happen, or at least cause doubt in the minds of the powers that be about whether the troops will follow their orders, that buys us more time. I don't say it's the only solution, it's just part of the solution. But one other group that's also critically important, it's kind of like constitutional triage. I'm trying to stop the major bleeding. If the military stands down, it doesn't make a difference if even if every police officer in the country turned against the Constitution and obeyed orders to go and confiscate your firearms or confiscate your property or your children or whatever. Even if that were to happen, without the support of the military, it is not enough of them to do it. If you rose up as the people again, they could not do it without the support of the military. Frankly, even if the military did it against us right now, we're strong enough to fight. But it'd be a whole lot easier, obviously, if the military sat it out or fought on our side. So they're the most critical population for that reason. The police are also very important. It's next in line, very, very, very close second is your police, especially your sheriffs. And we have seen this recently. You've got sheriffs across the country who are standing up. And that is something that also bucked conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom among a lot of patriots is all the police, all they care about is their pension. They'll do whatever they're told. And that's not true. There are stand-up sheriffs and even police chiefs like Mark Kessler from there in Pennsylvania. You've got police chiefs standing up now too. And so, and I think Sheriff Mack deserves the lion's share of the credit for that. He's done a very good job over the last decade doing a lot of hard work, reaching out to sheriffs and teaching them about their oath responsibilities. So that is having an effect now. And so you can look at Oath Keepers as being really the same mission, but he's focused on the sheriffs and police officers. He's on my board of directors, by the way, and so is John. But Oath Keepers is also focused on the military and then first responders. Now, why first responders? Because they are also given the orders to go and assist. They're ordered to shut down power lines and water lines. They're ordered to set up roadblocks, things like that. So it's important that they also understand they are the ones who will be used against you. What's going on right now is the same thing that happened in Germany when the Nazis took over. They controlled infiltrated and controlled the local police departments, the local governments, the local infrastructure. And that's what's happening to us today, too, as a country. DHS, through DG, and primarily right now, before that it was FEMA, those are the tentacles that reach down into every community. And you've seen recently where they're teaching local police that Christians are a threat, you name it. So this is what's happening. So to counteract that is the whole point of Oath Keepers, from the bottom up, as John said. The critical group he didn't mention, and that is the third is the veterans. It's critical that veterans also understand their oath responsibilities. He talked about it in the context of Operation Sleeping Giant, but even without that, you have a duty and responsibility to defend the Constitution. You all took an oath. When's your oath expire? When you do. As long as you're on this side of the grass, you've got responsibilities and duties. John's talked about the spectrum. All this really is the full spectrum of full citizenship. The powers that be want you to think your only responsibility, your only duty is to do what? Vote. You go vote for Oathbreaker A or Oathbreaker B, and after that they want you to sit down and shut up and don't pay attention to anything else they do. Just trust them. They pat you on the head. Thank you for voting. You've done your civic duty. Here's a little pin. You know, let us run the country after that. That's not your only responsibility. Let's talk about your duties as a citizen. What's a fundamental, important function to preserve life in your community? Name one. What do you need to preserve life?
Food, water,
shelter, security, fire protection. A volunteer fire department's a good example. Half the fire departments in this country are volunteers. Did you all know that? Okay. That's a good example of a core function. Who started the first volunteer fire department in the United States?
Ben Franklin.
That's an example of a core function. It wasn't the responsibility of professional firefighters to put out fires. Whose responsibility was it? The citizens. You guys ever watch the John Adams special, that documentary, or the little miniseries? The very first scene is John Adams, the lawyer, gets home from work. He's all tired, takes his wig off, takes off his boots, sits in front of the fire, and then a bell starts ringing. What's he do? He jumps up with no wig on, runs outside, and grabs a bucket and starts bailing along with everybody else. He didn't sit on his couch and says, oh, gee, I hear a fire siren. I sure hope the fire department gets there in time. He did not do that. He understood his responsibilities. So your responsibilities as a citizen is not just to vote. You're supposed to be doing a lot of other things. One of them is your own fire protection. It's another function you need to have in a local community. Security, right? Who is the security? I'll make it easy on you. What group, what entity is supposed to be necessary for the security of a free state? The militia. And that's one that's missing up here. I was waiting to see if someone else would say it. Right here should be militia. This is a constitutionally mandated as being necessary. They existed prior to the Constitution, but the Constitution and the Second Amendment recognize that it's essential, it's necessary. You gotta have it. As Dr. Vieira points out, it's the only place in the Constitution the word necessary is even used. It is necessary for what?
Free state.
Freedom. The security of a free state. You will not be secure and you will not be free without it. Do we have one now? No, not like it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be all of you. Every single one of you, and every lady too, if you're able-bodied, is supposed to be the militia. We have abdicated that duty and responsibility. Nature abhors a vacuum. If you create an empty space by sitting on your butt and watch it Dancing with the Stars, it will be filled. Who fills that space now? Well, you're supposed to be the government yourselves, right? But it's not your state, is it? Who is filling that space?
The professionals.
That's right. It's the professionals. It's starting at the top. It's NORTHCOM, which now has active duty troops assigned and deployed inside the United States for domestic use. That is absolutely backwards of how it's supposed to be. Washington, D.C. is supposed to have no choice but to rely on calling forth the militia, that is you, to execute three critical functions in Article 1, Section 8. What are they? What does Congress have the authority to call forth the militia for? What are they? To repel invasions, to suppress insurrections. Don't. What's the last one? To execute the laws of the Union. It tells you right there in the main body of the Constitution the only reasons that Congress can call forth the militia for, that's you, is to repel invasions, suppress insurrections, and execute the laws of the Union. It doesn't say anything about the standing army doing any of those three functions. No. Why did the founders only give Congress the power to call forth the militia to do these things? Why?
They advocated against the standing army.
That's right. They were suspicious of a standing army. They had just fought a standing army that had been used against them. And who was it that fought the standing army? The militia. One of the founders, their genius, had the answer to that ancient question of who shall guard the guardians that had been around since ancient Greece. You have professional warrior class to protect you against outside invaders. But who protects you against them when they decide they're going to lord it over you because they have the military power to do so? That had been the fate of many and many a society throughout human history. Is the generals realize they hold the military force and they can run the country. So their answer was, is that you are the military force. You are the primary domestic security force for repelling invasions, suppressing insurrections, and executing the laws of the Union. The federal government has to rely on you. So what happens if they call forth the militia to enforce a law that is contrary to the Constitution? What could happen? The militia could say no. The governors could refuse to deploy their men. The men themselves could refuse to deploy. Even if the governor is a Tory and goes along with it, the militia captains and the county militia units could say no. In other words, the government's at your mercy. They have to convince you that it's the right thing to do to get you to go do it. There's not a select group of professional soldiers that they groom and pay and have in their back pocket. That was the point of not having a standing army. When you must rely on the people, you cannot oppress the people using themselves as a tool of oppression. If everyone is the militia, how can the militia be used against you? It's only when you abdicate that duty and allow select militias like the National Guard, or even worse, a standing army, to be used instead, that you have the risk of that kind of oppression. Right now, what are you worried about? You're worried about the military being used against you. You're worrying about DHS arming up with ammunition and the ability for them to bring in, like with these joint task forces, several hundred feds, DHS, FBI, DEA, ATF, all coming together and stomping on you. That's what you're worried about, right? And you should be worried about it. Look what happened in Waco. How do you counteract that? How do you get back from being in the situation we're in, back to where we're supposed to be? Is first of all, recognize your responsibility. You have a duty to be the security force of your community right now. The militia is a critical institution. Another one I mentioned earlier is the jury. Why is the jury so important? Right? But even more basic than that,
it's not the government.
That's right. It's your neighbors. Under our constitutional design, the president cannot take away your life or liberty. The governor cannot take it away. The general cannot take it away. Your mayor cannot take it away. Your police chief, your sheriff cannot take away your life or liberty. Only, no one in the government can. Only a jury of your peers, your neighbors, have the power to judge you, whether you're innocent or guilty, and deprive you of your life or liberty. Only yourselves. It's a direct parallel to the militia. You are supposed to be the military power. You are also the only person, the only body that judges each other.
You're listening to a Radio Free Readout exclusive presentation with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Mr. Rhodes spoke to a group of patriots, warriors, and veterans on Thursday evening, April 11th, in Bonner County, Idaho. To learn more about Oath Keepers, go to www.oathkeepers.org. You can listen and download this and other episodes by going to www.radiofreereadout.com. This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American readout.
Mark Twain shared this insight. He said, "In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, brave, hated, and scorned. When his cause succeeds, however, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot." He's right, but now more than ever we cannot afford brave patriots to be a scarcity. They must be found in abundance. There may soon come a time when being a patriot without cost will be all but impossible. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Across America, the police state is growing. If you are in law enforcement or in the military and you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot who took your oath to protect and defend the Constitution seriously, and you see training and indoctrination that supports the police state, notify Radio Free Readout at once so we can inform others. You can do this confidentially. Your email and any other information will never be made public without your permission. Remember, if you see something, say something.
You are supposed to be the military power. You are also the only person, the only body that judges each other. It's a citizen's militia. It's a citizen's jury. Those two critical functions are in your hands only. That's how it's supposed to be. John mentioned that in the lead up to the American Revolution, there were some gross violations of fundamental rights of Englishmen that led to the war. He mentioned a couple of them already. The disbanding of the town meetings, the disbanding of colonial legislatures. I would add to that the imposition of martial law in Boston. The making of governor, General Gage was given the command over Boston, but also made the royal governor of all of Massachusetts. That's why when you read the list of reasons for the Declaration of Independence, for separating from England, which were also the reasons for taking up arms, what is listed there? He has, in many cases, deprived us of the benefit of trial by jury. That's one of the most fundamental reasons why they fought. And it was not just taking you away to be tried in England. That was, of course, a violation of your right to a jury trial by your peers. It was also the use of admiralty courts instead of juries. Parliament passed a law that said in certain cases involving customs, smuggling, pretty much whatever they wanted, they could use admiralty courts instead. So they expanded the jurisdiction of the admiralty courts. That was part of the now jury trial. They also stripped the militia captains and officers who were patriots. They stripped them of their commissions and put loyalists in charge of the colonial militias. The response, what was the response by the militias in Massachusetts to that? What'd they do? They stripped the commissions of these officers, and so the people formed their own militias at the county level and reappointed the same officers in command of the troops at the county level. They fought fire with fire. I want you to keep that in mind. You need to use your county government, what exists already, and whatever you have here to fight fire with fire. And what do you have left that you can still use right now? What institution is still there?
Sheriff.
Your sheriff.
Right.
That's right. And so that let's add to the, so we talked about the militia. This is the military function. But you can add to that, where's it at? It should be up here too. The posse. That's your law enforcement function. Now some would argue the militia can do both things. I think it's better to keep them kind of separate. The posse is there to back up the sheriff. Traditionally, throughout American history, the sheriff had to rely on the people themselves. Once again, who was the force that he had to convince was to come out and help him do something? Was the people themselves as the posse. He did not have a SWAT team, 20 or 30 guys, were trained by the FBI and the ATF to go do whatever he wants. He had to rely on you. That kept him in check. If you have a bad sheriff, wants to do bad stuff in violation of the Constitution, can he do it without you if you're the only thing he has to rely on? Once again, are you a posse right now? Do you belong to a posse? You've abdicated that responsibility. You've created a vacuum. It's been filled by professional full-time officers who go around and give you tickets to fund their own salaries. It's also been filled by professional full-time or part-time SWAT teams that can be concentrated on your house. It's not your neighbors coming kicking your door at O Dark 30. It's the SWAT team that oftentimes is a joint SWAT team from two or three towns. Yeah.
I understood, my understanding was that the posse comitatus actually was the right of the sheriff to ask and request help from the citizens in a dire situation where they need help.
Right. And traditionally, this is how it was, is he was dependent upon the people. It was a sheriff, maybe one or two deputies, but when the Dalton gang came to town, who was it that kicked their butts? It was the town. That's right. It's the whole town. So to preserve life, you've got to have food, water, shelter. You got to have security. So many people out there in the prepper movement, for example, have this idea they're going to be this isolated prepper. They don't want to tell anybody they got food or whatever, and they're going to, you know, weather the storm on their own. That will not preserve our freedom. That will not preserve this republic, because it still is operating in a vacuum. If you have a catastrophic economic collapse, for example, and you have chaos running in the streets, only because you have abdicated your duty to be the security force in your community. How can you have MS-13 or some outlaw biker gang or whatever horde of zombies come into your town and kill everybody and rape and pillage if every one of you is the militia, if every one of you is the posse? It can't happen. In your own town, you could not have a willful sheriff or a willful mayor under dire circumstances trying to set himself up as the grand poobah, the warlord. Or you could not even have a local veterans group trying to do that. If everybody is the militia, that can't happen. So for you preppers out there, you need to understand that the prepper model, the isolated prepper with a small group, is not going to get it done. That does not solve our big problem of that power vacuum. If there were an economic collapse right now, what would happen? What do you think would happen?
Martial law.
Potentially, yes. What we worry about, looking at it in a big picture strategy point of view, is that what's happened in this country, let me back up a second. Under the banner of food and water and essential things like that, what do we have right now as a country?
Dependence.
Do we have dependence? Back during the Cold War, we had a strategic grain reserve of 3 years worth of grain for all of the American people. You older folks remember that, right? It was called civil defense. And we had a national grain reserve that was enough to feed the entire population for 3 years. Now, why? Because if there was a nuclear exchange with the USSR, that's about how long it would take you to be able to grow crops again. We understood at that time and place the necessity, the absolute bedrock necessity. If you haven't got food, you die. How soon? About a month. You'll be functionally dysfunctional after about 2 weeks. You'll eke out laying there with a bloated belly until about a month, and then you're done. At this point right now, what's our grain reserve in this country? How much? Enough to give you each a half of a loaf of bread. That's what they have left out of that grain reserve. Now, why has our national government dropped the ball and left us vulnerable?
They want us to be obliged to them for
everything. Yeah, well, you can say be charitable. It's absolute ignorance and abdication of their responsibility, but you could also say it's willful and they got you under their thumb. So at this moment, just as a physical fact alone, because we don't have that food reserve, this nation is in a strategic checkmate position. All you'd have to do, whether it's an EMP strike, whether it's a nuclear strike, or whether it's an economic strike, all you'd have to do is disrupt the food supply in this country for like 3 or 4 months, 6 months at the outside, and half the population at least would starve to death. That's where we are right now because we don't have that reserve. Right now, I think it's important for you to understand this, is that the Chinese, for example, don't have to nuke us to do this to us. All they have to do is dump the dollar. Right now, the Federal Reserve is the largest purchaser of U.S. treasuries. Used to be China. It's been eclipsed by the Fed. The Chinese are slowly decoupling from the dollar. They just added on Australia in a mutual bilateral trade agreement with Australia and China where they don't use the dollar. Before that, it was Russia and Brazil and India. And they also started a Southeast Asia trading bloc. They are getting ready and preparing to dump the dollar. When they do, what will prop the dollar up? Only the fact it's been being traded for oil. But if they replace the dollar with the yuan as the world currency for trade, preferred world currency, which is what they are doing, when that happens, the rest of the world will go to the yuan. This is what they are planning on doing. You got George Soros, go look it up on YouTube. You got George Soros telling you this is what they're going to do. They're going to dump the dollar, replace it with a basket of currencies with the yuan in primary position. China is right now selling on the open market, I believe it's $6 trillion in yuan bonds. They're doing what we used to do. They're selling the yuan now to the world as the place they should put their investment into a currency. They have $3 trillion left in U.S. treasuries. When they've sold $6 trillion of their own, what can they then do with the $3 trillion U.S. treasuries? Cut their losses and sell them off. They've already lost one-third of the value of those treasuries just because of our hyperinflation we've already entered into, and it is. You're not feeling it yet, but there it is. Point is that China has no reason to hold on to those reserves. They're going to dump them eventually. When they do it, not if, but when, you will see at least a 50% devaluation within a matter of weeks of the power of your money. More like 75% more likely. That's what happened in Argentina in 2001. Go look it up watch it on YouTube. Go learn what happened there. A devaluation within a matter of days of 75% of the Argentine peso. Same thing happened in Germany. My point is that right now, you should see China, not with the finger on the nuclear button, but on the financial equivalent. It's a financial nuclear button. What's the bomb that kills only the people and leaves all the buildings?
Neutron
bomb. It's an economic neutron bomb. All they have to do is pull out their treasuries. They can make the excuse of us interfering in Korea, whatever. That could be the catalyst for it. The bankers are responsible for why we're in this position. But they can blame China, blame the Koreans, blame North Korea, and say, oh, it's because of that. It was warfare that killed the economy. That's where we are. And so the powers that be that want to kill this republic, all they have to do is let China pull out, blame it on the North Korean situation, and there you go. They could do that tomorrow. I think you should prepare for the very worst. You need to assume the worst. I don't think there's any way for the dollar to survive any longer. I'm not an expert, but based upon what experts say, its days are numbered. It's going to go the same way as the German mark, same way as the Argentinian peso. It's going to die. When it dies, this is what's going to happen to us. If we had the grain reserve, we could weather it out. At the moment, we have nothing as a country. You have some preppers, some LDS folks with food storage, and that's it.
You're listening to a Radio Free Readout exclusive presentation with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Mr. Rhodes spoke to a group of patriots, warriors, and veterans on Thursday evening, April 11th, in Bonner County, Idaho. To learn more about Oath Keepers, go to www.oathkeepers.org. You can listen and download this and other episodes by going to www.radiofreereadout.com. This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American readout.
So what happens, and my board of directors and I war game this, if we are domestic enemies of the Constitution, what would we do? We would let this happen, blame it on some foreign power like China, blame it on a war so you rally the patriotic spirit and say, oh no, look what happened because we relied on a central bank at the national level. The solution is a worldwide version of the Fed, and they're already selling that. The special drawing rights from the IMF, they've set up a worldwide version of the Fed so they can collapse the dollar, let you guys starve for about 6 months, let you all kill each other. Total chaos reigns. If they want to get rid of a few million people for 100 million, let you starve to death. Then come in like the cavalry and say, oh, we're here to help you. All you got to do is give your guns, we'll give you food. All you got to do is submit yourself to the new world structure, the worldwide Fed and the worldwide government, and we will help you. And oh, by the way, the only reason the food trucks didn't get here faster is because of those extremists over there. You got to turn them in. They're the ones that are fighting us and preventing us from helping you. Most of your neighbors, after a month or two of being able to only like eat bark off of trees and killing all the deer in the area, they will turn you in. They will do anything to get fed. That's why you have a duty and responsibility as part of your oath. Who swore the oath again? Raise your hand. You have a duty to fulfill the military security function, the police security function. You also have a duty to fulfill the food security function. And you're not just doing it for yourselves. You're doing it for your country. If you don't do it, we are in a strategic checkmate, and they will drop the hammer on us. I believe that is their plan. So you have a duty and responsibility to do it right now. You have got to build that grain reserve. Do it as individuals, do it as church groups, do it as veterans halls, do it as your local militia, whatever your banner is, do it. This last political cycle, how many millions of dollars do the American people spend on elections? Untold numbers of millions of bucks were spent on that one thing they tell you you have a duty to do, is pull that lever and vote for somebody, right? Push the little buttons. You spent millions of dollars on that. How much money do we spend on getting our food reserve back up for our country? Nothing. So they are letting you spend money on what they want you to spend money on, and they don't want you to do these other things. Do you believe George Soros, Janet Napolitano, and Barack Obama, for example, or Mark Potok from SPLC, do you think they want you to have a grain reserve? No. Do they want you to have security in the form of a local militia or posse? No. In fact, they will demonize you for doing any of these things except for voting. Voting is the only thing they will not demonize you for doing. So you need to do what they don't want you to do. You have very limited time. So I encourage you to think about this as two pillars going up. On one side is public. This is your government bodies, your sheriff's department, your county government, your town government. Do what you can through that. But while you're working on that, and while you're bucking the corrupt politicians you have in every community, you try to clean them out, try to reform it, do it officially. If you can get an official sheriff's posse, that's great. If you can have your county start an official county militia under the county government, that's also wonderful. What's the advantage of that?
Legitimacy.
Right. Actual legal legitimacy, because you're part of the government, makes it a lot harder for ATF to mess with you, but also the perceived legitimacy among your peers. It's also the benefit of a sheriff's posse, legitimacy. The sheriff, I think, is probably your more realistic solution. It's much more difficult to get county commissioners to establish a formal militia. Go ahead and do it, push for it, but I wouldn't count on it. Your sheriff, though, only takes one man, Kim, to decide to form a posse. Now, but what happens if that isn't working? You cannot get them to establish a formal posse or militia. You should also, at the same time, be doing things in the private pillar. Things you can do without government support or permission. Like what? Neighborhood watch. Nothing stops you from doing a neighborhood watch right now. You can do it this instant today or tomorrow. If you start a neighborhood watch, let's put it this way. If I were to go to my neighbors and say I'm going to start a local neighborhood militia, I might get a certain number of guys that'll show up. If I say I'm going to start a neighborhood watch, will I get more guys? More gals? Yes. So nothing against militias. I think it's totally right and proper, and in fact necessary that people be doing that. But I would encourage you to consider starting with a neighborhood watch. Police stations across the country, police departments across the country have neighborhood watch programs. Tap into it. They've been building up neighborhood watches with that McGruff dog and all that kind of stuff for years. So it's very vanilla. So how can they then demonize it? So if you use that structure and you make that what you call it, that puts them on their heels, because now they got to demonize something they've been propping up for years. Right. So you start a neighborhood watch, you invite the cops, there's probably even a liaison officer in the department who's assigned to that task, and you just go do what they tell you to do. Start a neighborhood watch, start with the radios, don't dress in militia, camouflage, don't be carrying a bunch of guns around, start with radios, and you focus on other than shooting stuff, like what do we do when the power goes out, what do we do about sanitation,
suspicious vehicles.
Sure. Okay. What do you do about, you know, yes, we know that there's some crack dealers or meth dealers in the area, you know, whatever it is. You start the neighborhood watch. Point being, it's already there. It's a structure you can tap into right now. The next one would be like a neighborhood mutual aid society. And that can be a spinoff of the neighborhood watch. It could be, there you go. We got it in mind too. In our neighborhood, it turned out, it just started up spontaneously. Some of the women who did canning and things like preserving got together, and then they started a little food bank and a clothing bank. They get together once a month at the community center, and they have a row of boxes of free clothing for kids and adults and some free food Anyone can walk in there and get it when they need it. So they did it on their own. So neighborhood watches, mutual aid societies, you can do right now in your neighborhood. And also inside your church, another private institution. What are most churches doing every Sunday and the rest of the week? They do any of these things? Some do. The LDS church does. Some non-LDS churches do, but most of them do not. Okay? So the churches should be fulfilling a lot of these functions. They should have a food bank, a clothing bank. They should have a fund for people that lose their house for fire or whatever. They should be helping to store food. No reason why your church should not have a food bank built up for hard times like the LDS church does. Good idea. What's another institution you have in the community that's private or semi-private that's just kind of sitting there doing nothing? What do all you veterans belong to? VFW, American Legion, Marine Corps League, what do? Toys for Tots? They do parades? The rest of the time is right. Most are sitting on a bar stool. Not all the guys, let me put it this way. A lot of guys belong to a VFW and never do anything. They just joined up because their dad did. Like in Kalispell, it was 500 members of the VFW. That's a lot of guys. But what are they doing? If you can get your veterans organizations, your local VFW hall, to understand their spectrum of duties as a citizen and as an oath-sworn veteran, and then get them to see their veterans hall as a unit, you have gone a long way towards resurrecting our republic from the bottom up. Every one of those VFW halls is a unit. How many guys are familiar with the Special Forces concept of an A-team? You've got your alpha detachments in SF. What do? They go out and train. That's their primary mission is trainers. They're designed to parachute into a country, for example, and train all the guerrillas. Every alpha detachment, every A-team has specialists in different areas. You've got two of each. You got two medics. You got two combo guys. You got two demolitions experts. You got two heavy weapons, two light weapons, and you got your intelligence officer. You've covered the spectrum of the things they need to function as a unit and then force multiply by training the community. That's what they do. Like when we invaded Iraq, SF parachuted in ahead of time and trained and organized the Kurds. And the Kurds kicked the crap out of Saddam's troops in northern Iraq. Why? Because they had the A-teams there to show them how. Every VFW is like an A-team. Every VFW, you got combo guys, you got medics, you got guys who were supply and motor pool specialists, you got guys who were demolitions. Not that I'm advocating you go out there and play with explosives. Point being, you've got a cross-section of MOSs, cross-section of skills. That's also true in your community groups, in your churches. In this room right now, who are my medics? Raise your hand, medics. 1, 2, 3. Who are my combo guys? 1, 2, 3, 4. Who did motor pool and logistics, supply and logistics and fuel? Nobody? Right there, got one back there. See what I'm saying? But you guys probably don't even know each other. Every one of your groups can start thinking in terms of you being a unit. VFW halls, American Legions especially, you get in there and you tell them, guys, wake up. Here's what's going on in our country. Here's your duty and responsibility. Get on it. They can do that as a private organization within their hall. Tell them, we will help you. We will raise money. We will raise supplies. You tell them, but look, guys, you have a duty and responsibility and your own self-interest to make sure your medics have the stuff they need to patch holes in you, to make sure your combo guys have the radios and antennas and batteries they need. Get on it, if they get on it. If you had every VFW hall, for example, in this country, there's one in every town, if you had every one of them with a ham radio set up in it, with a base station and then portables in their trucks, what do you got right there? A nationwide communication network that's resilient down to the town level. You've got comma between this town and next town over, this county and next county over, no matter what. And who's doing it? The veterans. Not a militia that can be attacked and demonized, the VFW hall. Let them go ahead and demonize the VFW hall for trying to establish civil defense functions to help their community. Go ahead. So use whatever is there. Go and wake, that's what we call it, Operation Sleeping Giant, waking them up. It's not that the non-veterans don't also have a duty and responsibility as citizens. They do. The point is, again, is triage. If we have limited time, let's focus where we can do the most good. If you can go and wake up the commander and vice commander of every VFW hall and the guys to their duties and responsibilities, then you just turn them loose to go do it on their own. I'm not telling them to join Oath Keepers. I don't want them to turn their VFW hall into an Oath Keepers chapter. I don't care if they join Oath Keepers or not. I just want them to do what they're supposed to be doing within their hall as a unit. Same goes for every community group out there. So that's what we encourage you guys to do, is start thinking in terms of like a hierarchy of needs. That's why they're listed 1, 2, 3, 4. One is food, water, shelter, fuel, communications, medical. It's really hard to improvise food. Either you got it or you don't. It's hard to improvise medical. Either you got it or you don't. Same for commo. Hard to improvise commo. After things go to hell in a handbasket, how are you going to get ham radios? Get them now. Fuel is another thing. How do you improvise fuel? Either you got gas, diesel stored up, or you don't. Okay? Like Patton learned when he was going across Europe, like a friggin' banshee, he ran out of fuel. You can't fight if you're dead because you starved to death. You can't fight if you have no fuel. You can't get from point A to point B. You also can't fight very well at all if you ain't got commo. And you won't last very long if you haven't got medical support either. Logistics wins wars. So even all you hardcore guys that say, I've got my guns and ammo, do you have logistics? That's number one. Even if you're not talking about, you know, some kind of worst case scenario, when it comes to preserving your lives and your community, through an ice storm or through whatever else happens, you gotta have these essential things. You gotta have food, shelter, water, commo, medical, and fuel.
You're listening to a Radio Free Readout exclusive presentation with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Mr. Rhodes spoke to a group of patriots, warriors, and veterans on Thursday evening, April 11th, in Bonner County, Idaho. To learn more about Oath Keepers, go to www.oathkeepers.org. You can listen and download this and other episodes by going to www.radiofreereadout.com. This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American readout.
If there is any hope of restoring America, we cannot, as a free people, allow ourselves to be divided. Division is what the destroyers of liberty are counting on, and if that means, as a last resort, preserving those American ideals within the boundaries of the American readout, there must be unity among the patriots. We must all hang together, or assuredly we shall all hang separately. That's what Benjamin Franklin said, and that's what I say too. I'm Violette Sabo, with points to ponder, words to live by, and ideals which define us.
Help keep a watchful eye out for tyranny and the police state. If you see something, say something.
We are eternally grateful to all our heroes, past and present, who have sworn to protect and defend our nation and our Constitution. Thank you for keeping your word. Thank you, Oath Keepers.
when it comes to preserving your lives and your community through an ice storm or through whatever else happens, you gotta have these essential things. You gotta have food, shelter, water, medical, and fuel. And you gotta have security. Recently I saw this one prepper site making fun of a lady. She said, she's a prepper, and said, I've got food stored up, not just for myself, but also for my community. And this prepper site went back and forth making fun of her, saying that she's gonna be killed, raped, and murdered by looters, and those take her stuff. What's the answer to that?
The rest of the neighborhood.
Yeah. If the point of distribution is not her, but is the neighborhood watch or the militia, who's going to rape the militia? Ain't happening. MS-13, whatever, you know, dream up your worst case scenario, bad guy, outlaw, gang coming into town. If you are the militia, it can't happen. That's how you answer that. She does not distribute the food. The local militia does. That's who does it. The guys with the guns are the point of contact. You want some food? Great. You go over and see the militia captain. He'll set you up. No one's going to be looting that. Not going to happen.
Light armored vehicles, I think the Homeland Security just ordered 2,717 of them. They don't have big... they look like a tank without the big...
They're MRAPs, yeah. Yeah, mine resistant armor.
With rubber wheels.
Right. Here's the big picture point, though. One of the points of doing this is to fill that vacuum. What is the scenario again? The scenario, possible scenario is, cause an economic collapse, let there be massive chaos. In that chaos, come in like the cavalry. In exchange for your freedom, you get food and security. So the way you stop that, and it's where martial law comes from, look at Katrina. The reason why I believe the National Guard and police obeyed those orders was to disarm the citizenry was in part ignorance, but it was also human nature. They saw an unprepared population who were desperate and in chaos. And they came into that situation, and it's much easier to sell the troops that this is a serious situation. We have to set aside the Constitution and do what's necessary to restore order. It's much easier to sell if there's a real emergency going on. If you guys are your own security and you're squared away, what is the excuse then for coming in and imposing martial law on you? It's much more likely that the troops and the police will say, wait a minute, Mr. President, they don't need us here, they don't want us here, they've got it handled. Why are you telling us to go do this? More of them will say no if they do not perceive it as being some kind of horrible emergency. Also, fewer of your neighbors will clamor for martial law, as it is right now. If you collapse the economy, let them starve for a month, they'll beg for martial law. They will welcome it. They'll demand it. When are you guys going to impose martial law and fix this? So you need to fill that vacuum. You need to provide security. This is the problem I have with most preppers, is they are not thinking about this bigger picture. They're presuming that that's a lost cause and you're going to have absolute chaos and breakdown of society. But that's not what's going to happen. The government's still going to be there. They've got food for them. They've been storing up. They've got a way to pay their troops with food. They also have outside help who come in. It's not gonna be a anarchist situation with no government. It ain't going down like that. It might be like that for 6 months. Like I said, let you kill each other, and they come in. So you need to see this as a way to stay alive, but also, and to preserve your own security. You don't want a local strongman and his guys being the security. That's just too tempting for him to become the warlord. It's gotta be you. And when you do that, you also remove the pretext and you put the bad guys in checkmate. If you revitalize your local security and your local provisions from the ground up, you take away their excuse for martial law and you erect a system of citizen resistance that's there. It's ready to go. just like the founding fathers did. They didn't wait until April 19th to go grab their rifle out of the closet as individuals. They formed up, they trained, they stored provisions. They got ready. So preparedness, essential life necessities, security, and then comes this other one, and that's economic independence. An important part of that is sound money. What is real money?
Gold and silver.
And things you can eat.
Right.
So part of that would be local farmers' co-ops, supporting your local economy. Stop shopping at Walmart if you can. Start buying local so you have a functioning economy here. You got a black, what's the standard frontier town have? The blacksmith, the doctor, the baker, the shoemaker, right?
General store.
You've got a local functioning economy. You need that here. That needs to be ready to go. The Chinese are dumping the dollar. What are they doing? What are they buying? What else are they buying? Rice. They're buying a lot of rice, too, for the people. They're buying real assets. They're buying gold. They're buying oil. They're buying mining land, even here in the United States. And they're also buying food. They know what they're doing. So get on it. You guys got to have gold and silver in your pockets. You need to have your own garden. You should be growing your own food. Consider it a victory garden or a liberty garden. Just like during World War II. Got chickens? I do. I got eggs. So, you know, that's wonderful to have. So, like John was saying, though, in your local community, you see yourselves as a mutual support structure. Just like when it comes to security and preparedness, you've got a cross-section of skills. Same old go for that independent economy. Each one of you should have what you call a liberty skill, a liberty trade, something you could do in a basic low-level economy to get by. Either you have chickens and eggs, you know, eggs to sell, or you know how to tan hides. I mean, literally tan hides, not kick butt. Or you're good at taking care of animals. You've got goats you can sell, whatever it is. You're good at growing things, you know how to preserve things, whatever your basic skill is, blacksmith. You know, think of something you can do that other folks usually can't do, and make sure you got a skill that's tradable in a barter economy, okay? But then also, of course, support local farmers' co-ops. No reason why you got empty land you're not using, put together a co-op in your community. Tell your neighbors, hey, for 20 bucks or 30 bucks per season, come on in here, you grow a bunch of food, you get a basket, we all share, we all get a basket out of it. You put together a co-op on whatever it's farmable land. You don't gotta farm it yourself, just let them come in and do it. We do that in Kalispell, it works just great. So that's the economic independence part. The rest of the world is already starting to decouple from the fiat system. Our own government is not helping us do that. Why? Because when that fake system collapses, they want you to be underneath it when it collapses. They want you desperate. They want you to have no choice but to reach out and latch onto their offered rope to save you. And a good analogy I like to use is we're on the Titanic. It's already hit the iceberg. It's going down. And what they want you to do is flounder around in the water with no other choice but to grab a hold of the line from the UNN Leviathan. That's their ship. They're going to present to you as your solution, your own solution. You want to drown, or you want to jump on board the world fed and the world system of control. So what you have to do is what? Get back to what's still there. What is still there?
Constitution.
That's right. The USS Constitution is still afloat. She's still there. You got to get on her, patch up the sails, patch the leaks, and sail it. You have got to do it from the ground up. You got to be Americans, full spectrum Americans, not just voter Americans. That's not an American. An American answers the bell in the middle of the night, gets out of bed, and goes and helps find a lost kid. puts out the fire in the next town or the neighbor's house. The American answers the call of the sheriff when he needs them to back him up. An American is there drilling on the green or wherever as the militia. An American serves on the jury. An American's in the town hall meetings holding their feet to the fire. An American serves in political office if he has to. Whether you like it or not, do you want to serve in political office? Do you want to serve in public office? Do you want to run for office?
I don't know.
Have you ever done it?
No.
Do you want to?
I've thought about it.
Would you like to?
Yes.
Do you think it would be fun?
You know what? I'm also a chaplain, and I serve God as well. I wanted to say one thing.
I guess my point was, most people say no, and then I say, well, you're the guy I want to run for office. I don't want the guy who wants the power. I want the guy who doesn't want it.
Right.
But who does it out of civic duty. The founder's ideal was a disinterested person who serves the community because he feels the necessity of doing so, like Washington did. Did Washington want power?
No.
How many times did he give power up? How many times? At least three times. The first time was when some of his officers wanted to pull a coup during the revolution because they were frustrated with Congress. They said, we're not getting the provisions we need to fight this war. We got to take matters in our own hands. He rejected that, put down that attempt. He made sure that he was subservient to the civilian leadership of the revolution, to Congress. That's the first time. Second time, he gave away power. What was it? But after the revolution was over, he retired. He could have been king of the United States, probably, or whatever he wanted to be. He retired back to Mount Vernon. He made a very overt point of retiring and disengaging from public life. But back to Mount Vernon. That was number two. The third time was what? As my friend David Gilley likes to say, Washington cast a long shadow. His precedent of stepping down after two terms, even though it was not mandated by the Constitution, was respected and followed until when? That's right. Wow, what a shock. Now, I'll tell you what, I think Lincoln would have done it too. That's what I think. I think he would have stuck around too. But, point being,
Lincoln took the Constitution very seriously.
Yeah, he did a lot of things that were very unconstitutional. That's a topic for another time. What he did was unconstitutional. I'm going to tell you one thing he did, which is very relevant to today. He imposed military jurisdiction and military trial and detention on over 15,000 northern civilians. He tried about 5,000 of them by military tribunal. Now, what does the Constitution say is supposed to be done with an American accused of making war against his own country or aiding the enemy? For what charge?
Treason.
Article 3, Section 3 of the Treason Clause. And once again, even if you're accused of the worst thing, making war against your own country or aiding the enemy, what do you get? You get a jury trial. The president cannot take away your liberty or your life. Lincoln violated the Constitution when he did that. It made sense to do it to Southerners who had broken away and become a new country. They were at war, they were like two different countries. They obeyed the laws of war, they exchanged prisoners, they had truces and ceasefires, things like that. That made some sense. But it did not make sense, constitutional sense at all, to do it to northern civilians. The Supreme Court, in Ex parte Milligan, in 1866, put that martial law genie back in the bottle and ruled what he had done to be unconstitutional. And thank God they did it. Problem is guess who resurrected this idea that you can use the laws of war and military trial on Americans? Who did that? Roosevelt. FDR did it in World War II.
You're listening to a Radio Free Readout exclusive presentation with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Mr. Rhodes spoke to a group of patriots, warriors, and veterans on Thursday evening, April 11th, in Bonner County, Idaho. To learn more about Oath Keepers, go to www.oathkeepers.org. You can listen and download this and other episodes by going to www.radiofreereadout.com. This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American readout. If you serve your country, either in law enforcement or in the military, and you are a patriot, love liberty, and want to do your part in preserving what made America great and free, join Oath Keepers today.
Eight German saboteurs came ashore from a U-boat. One of them had been a U.S. citizen. He claimed he had a right to a jury trial. Roosevelt said, no way. I'm going to try him by military tribunal. The Supreme Court, the New Deal Supreme Court, that had given everything else he wanted, backed him up and said, the laws of war apply. You only get a jury trial when it comes to criminal law. If you're accused of violating the laws of war, it's a military trial that has jurisdiction over those charges, is what the court said. Ex parte querent, 1942. That is where the court was popped back off. It sat around, unused, forgotten since then, but then Bush grabbed it after 9/11, the Bush lawyers actually, and said, see, we can go ahead and try an American citizen by military tribunal or hold him in military attention. And they did that to Jose Padilla and Yasser Hamdi, two American citizens. And that's the precedent that has put in place the claimed authority that Obama now enjoys. He claims the authority not only to detain you or try by tribunal, but what else does he claim the authority to do? Kill you. You all know, serve in the military under the laws of war, you can not only just detain an enemy or try them by tribunal for war crimes, you can also just kill them, right? This is the power that they're applying to all of you. This is the problem with the NDAA. Is Congress is saying in the NDAA that yes, we agree with this. And what is it? It's a violation of one of the causes of your forefathers taking up arms, a violation of jury trial. In fact, it's far worse than anything the king claimed the power to do. King George never claimed the power to just have you shot on sight before the fighting started. Our government claims more power and authority than even what Parliament and the king claimed. It's even worse. Point being, though, these structures are there for a reason. This is what it means to have a Republican form of government. It's not just voting, it's all of these things. Last prong is sovereignty, rule of law, and I would put nullification in there too. You have a duty, as Jefferson and Madison pointed out in the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, the states have a duty to stand up when the national government is violating the Constitution. That was in reaction to the Alien Sedition Acts of 1798, which criminalized free speech, made it so they could arrest newspaper editors and journalists for criticizing the president, and they did. A gross violation of the First Amendment. And so Jefferson and Madison, these are two important guys, right? These are no lightweights. The man who wrote the Declaration of Independence and the man, Madison, who's considered the father of the Constitution. It was his Virginia plan at the convention that was the nucleus of what became our Constitution. These two great leaders of our republic told you exactly what your responsibilities and duties are when the national government passes something like Obamacare or Feinstein's gun bill or whatever else it is. Is it just the responsibility of the Supreme Court to say no? It's also the responsibility of every sworn officer. That's why the oath is there. That's why Article 6 mandates that every officer of all branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, must take an oath to support the Constitution, federal and state. It goes right down the chain of command. And the reason why it's there, to bring it back around to Oath Keepers again, is that at any point along that chain of command, someone can say no. Excuse me. And break the chain. One example I'd like to use is that there was a unit during Katrina that refused to take part in gun confiscation, a unit for the Utah National Guard, intelligence battalion. And there was one staff sergeant on that unit, Staff Sergeant Joshua May, who was the reason why it happened. Because he knew the Constitution, because he took his oath seriously, he was there at the right moment And because he was always talking about the Constitution, all the other guys respected him. And in fact, they came to him when they heard what was going on in Katrina. They came to him and said, "Sergeant May, what do you think about this?" And they all talked. And they decided they were not going to do it. And the officers of the unit, the lieutenants and captains, asked the staff sergeant. They asked him to go talk to their commander, which tells you a lot. So he was the guy in the unit they all respected. And because he was there at the right time, that whole unit did a preemptive refusal and said, no, they will not participate. That's the point of the oath. And everyone has a duty. The sheriff is not a special constitutional officer. He is a very traditional, important, like the jury is a function that's always been there throughout English history. The sheriff's also been there. It is an important office. But he's not alone in his oath responsibilities. You know what I'm saying? Every beat cop, your mayor, county commissioners, they all have a duty to say no. That's why nullification is so important. And you have a duty to say no. As an individual, you have a duty and responsibility. Like Henry David Thoreau pointed out, you must use civil disobedience. You must use refusal to comply. But if you can do it as a community, it's much easier than you doing it by yourself. So that's the last prong. And that brings us back to your responsibilities. It's full spectrum. It does include politics. But when it comes to politics, you need to impress upon your elected officials that they cannot sit on their hands and wait for the Supreme Court to say whether or not something's constitutional. They have a duty to judge it right now. Just like on the jury has the power to judge the law as well as the facts and nullify, so does your county, so does your town, so does your sheriff. Okay? So, any questions?
All right. I'm going to give them a minute to relax.
You can
relax the voice for a second. No, I'm not going to answer questions. Anyway.
Good. Any questions? I got no questions.
What about this move that we're seeing as far as the feds trying to basically take all powers away from the sheriff? What do you know about that?
Well, I think that's part of the, you know, once again, they see what's still there. One of your last residuals of what we're supposed to have is still your sheriff. He's elected by the people. He answers only to the people. He's a real problem for them. It takes only one election to put a good sheriff in and cause him a lot of trouble. So, of course, they want to either strip the sheriff of their power or pressure and convince sheriffs that they have no choice but to enforce or at least to get out of the way.
Well, how are they legally going to do that when those elections are local elections?
Well, they have in Colorado, for example, there's a bill now to strip the sheriff of his position if he doesn't enforce state law. Or federal law trying to do that. So you have to fight to preserve the power of the sheriff. And of course, we saw in Delaware, Sheriff Christopher, I believe, right? He's been fighting there to preserve the power of the sheriff. In the East Coast, they're already starting to strip him of their powers. So this is a fight you're going to have to fight. But of course, you could do what, like the Suffolk County Resolves did in Massachusetts, is you can say, well, okay, you're saying he's no longer the sheriff. Well, we say he still is. And we're not going to recognize anybody else. Go ahead and put your Tory in here, but we answer to him. We will support him. We are his posse. And that's an important point. You cannot expect a sheriff to stand up like in High Noon. How many people have seen High Noon? Was a sheriff, did he have backup in High Noon? No, he was left all by himself. His fiancée backed him up. That was about it. You cannot do that to your sheriff. You can't demand him that he defend the Constitution, defend your rights while you sit on your rear ends. You got to be willing to step up and be his volunteer posse. Now, on that point, a good example of working in these two columns, Sheriff Mark Gower in Utah, good constitutional sheriff, he was asked at a public forum about starting a posse, and he said, well, unfortunately, here in Iron County, I have to have the county commissioner's permission to form a posse. And so they turned to me and said, what can we do about this? I said, well, I think your best solution is to go ahead and start neighborhood watches. Start neighborhood watches, you invite the sheriff over for lemonade, and he gets to know all of you. You're not his posse, but guess what? He needs you, you're his posse. So you work with whatever you got to deal with. So, but you got to back him up. You have got to back him up right now. So even if you got a sheriff's kind of on the fence, kind of wishy-washy, you form neighborhood watches, you form mutual aid societies, the Veterans Hall to step up, you all sign resolutions against, say, gun control, for example, or gun confiscation. You all sign a resolution you're not going to comply with any of the stuff coming out of D.C. You have all the veterans and all the gun owners sign it. You all go to the sheriff and say, Sheriff, here's where we stand. Where do you stand? And, by the way, we will back you up if you do the right thing. It's a carrot and stick kind of thing. The carrot is he got your support. He can see he has support politically. He'll get reelected. He can see he's got physical support and moral support. The other side, though, is a stick. He sees all of you standing up together, all the veterans, all the gun owners, saying this is where we stand. He knows that if he goes a wrong way, you're going to oppose him. You'll oppose him politically. You'll oppose him morally. And you might even oppose him physically. So I think it's good. But, of course, put the best light forward, best foot forward. Sheriff, we want you to do the right thing. We hope you will keep your oath. We trust you will. We're here to back you up. Now, where do you stand? Well, it's kind of like when you talk to cops. I know a guy in Montana. I won't mention his name, but, well, okay. What's the guy's name? Never, I won't do it. Okay. So anyway, libertarian activist in Montana for many years. And he showed me a card after I started Oath Keepers. He walked up and said, oh, look at this. I've been handing this out to cops for like 10 years. And on the card, it says, you are part of an illegitimate, oppressive government. You are their enforcement tool. You need to wake up. So that's the card he would hand out to police officers.
He'll be real compassionate when he stops you.
Well, that's well, our way of doing it is a bit different. I presume the best in a person. Oftentimes, I think I've found this to be true in my life. Maybe you've experienced the same thing. A lot of times, people will behave the way you expect them to. And if you walk up and treat them like a good man, he's more likely to be responsive and to see himself the same way. If you walk up and say, I want to thank you for keeping your oath, that's more likely to be a way for him to see, yeah, I am a good guy that keeps my oath. And he talked to him about, hey, you know, like here's a card from Oath Keepers. These are other police officers you can contact, and they're all behind you in keeping your oath. And here's their list of orders that they will not obey. Please consider that, and we'd like to have you think about, you know, these orders and your obligation and duty to refuse them. That's the better way to approach somebody. And the same goes for your county commissioners. I'm pretty down on politicians in general. And the same way I'm down on most lawyers, too. You know, most of them have long ago forgotten their oath. But if you walk into them and go, look, you know, we support you in keeping your oath. You took an oath to support and defend the Constitution like I did as a vet. You have the same duty. I'm here to back you up to do the right thing. Here's why I'm here. This is the issue I think is important to understand. Here's why we have to stand together. We're here to help you. That's a much better way. If they then buck you, then you can try to educate them. You know, give them a copy of Sheriff Mack's book. Point out, maybe you can give them a model resolution I wrote against the NDAA, which is pretty detailed. You know, whatever it is, give them education and say, I think you misunderstand. Here's some information. Please go read this, and we'll talk again next meeting. Then you come back and say, did you read that? Yes, I did. Well, do you understand it? Any questions about it? And you try to educate them. If at that point they still refuse to go along, they know what's right, they still want to do what's wrong, then you can pull out the stick and go, you know what? If you are not going to keep your oath, then we will remove you from office. You need to go think about it again, nice and hard, about what your responsibility is. We have a duty too. We will be back here. We are not going away. And you need to keep your oath. We support you in doing so. But if you refuse to do so, we will replace you with someone who will. So, all right. Any other questions? Yeah. Right. This is kind of interesting because, well, first, like you said, the word militia has been demonized. And I think one of the reasons why is because the militia movement of the 90s came up in reaction to Waco and Ruby Ridge. And so it was in anger and justified anger and reaction to something that happened. And so they were very, the whole tone of it was we are here to fight the federal government or to oppose them. And so that was their first foot forward. Not we are revitalizing this essential core civic duty. Some did talk about that, but because that first foot forward is we're here to stop the next Waco, the public perception of them is they're anti-government. And of course, their enemies capitalized on that, the ADL and SPLC. Sure, the left does not want you to have any kind of militia, whether it's government or not. You go to propose a militia bill, they'll fight that too. They do not want strong state militias or county militias. So the problem is, though, is that it was demonized very successfully. And so, yeah, trying to take back that name. And Dr. Vieira's way of doing it is by statute. Edwin Vieira's book, what's it called, Constitutional Homeland Security, about the militia. And he advocates you do it through state statute, preferably. But I've talked to him. He also is fine with doing it by county commissioners doing it by ordinance if they can. That gives you that public structure and that public legitimacy. That's one of the ways to counter this demonization. If you do it through a public entity, then what do they say? If it's an official county part of the government, like the volunteer fire department, is under the county commissioner, staffed by volunteers, but usually it's a fire chief appointed by the county commissioners, and they own the equipment. If you do it kind of like a parallel to that, it's much harder to attack. But I do want you to know that there is precedent for voluntary groups. In Virginia, there were a couple of extremists who started a group of volunteers that formed a militia. Who were they? These are individual people. Two extremists started a volunteer militia. One was named George Mason. The other one was named George Washington. So General Washington, before he became General Washington, was a veteran in private life who started a volunteer militia. So they did it wherever they could. They would do it through official sanction. Like the Suffolk County Resolve, I encourage you to go read those, look them up online. That's where they had stripped their officers of their commissions. Suffolk County formed their own militia at the county level, reappointed the same officers. That was an example of where they controlled the power of the county government. They did it through that means. Where they did not, they would form volunteer, or where they had resistance, they would form volunteer associations. So if you can do that, and you are in an environment where that seems to work pretty good, but if you're not in that kind of environment, you do the exact same thing in the long run, just calling a neighborhood watch. You want to be in the same place. When the crap hits the fan, what counts is who's on your buddy team, who's on your fire team, who's on your squad, who's there to back you up. And whether you call it a neighborhood watch or the Lightfoot militia, under duress, it's not really going to matter, right? Not really. It helps. The more legitimate you are, the better. So in your territory, in your town and county, you do it whatever way you have to, but it's got to get done.
You've been listening to a Radio Free Readout exclusive presentation with Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers. Mr. Rhodes spoke to a group of patriots, warriors, and veterans on Thursday evening, April 11th, in Bonner County, Idaho.
To learn more about Oath Keepers, go to www.oathkeepers.org. You can listen and download this and other episodes by going to www.radiofreereadout.com. This is Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Readout. We'll be right back.